So my name is Theodore Kerr, sitting here in Hudson, New York at the Solaris Building on Warren Street. It's June 15th, 2015, and I'm a student with the Oral History Summer School. I'm here with Sean Rowland, collecting stories for the Hudson Archive. Sean, can I have you restate your name and say hi?
Hi, my name is Sean Rowland. I live in Hudson, New York, and I'm from Nassau, New York.
Great, thank you. So to start, just tell me a little bit about where you came from.
Sure. I grew up pretty close to Hudson, about 40 minutes north on the border of Rensselaer and Columbia County. I grew up out in the countryside. That's where I came from.
And what about where you came from today?
Today I came from my house, which is 3 blocks from here on 5th Street and Clinton Street in Hudson.
And what, when you talked about where you came from first, you mentioned the countryside. When did you move from the countryside to the city?
I first left Nassau, the area I grew up, when I was 16, after graduating high school, and from there I bounced around from to different cities, and then to college, and then to some other cities, and then finally ended up here in Hudson about 3 years ago. Do you want to hear about, should I talk about all those other places?
Yes.
Okay. So let's see, when I left home, I first moved to Spain, to the south of Spain, to a city called Granada. And I went there because I just felt ready to explore the world a little bit and wanted to learn a different language. I'd had some friends growing up who spent time in that same city, in the same area of Spain, and had come back and told me about great experiences. So I saved some money and packed a bag and moved there. I stayed there for maybe 8 months, and then came back to this area again, to the Hudson Valley, and was maybe there for another 6 months. Then I went to college outside of Philadelphia, a school called Haverford. I went there for a little bit, a couple of years, and then left and came back here to this area again and worked, then went back to school. After school, I moved to California, to San Francisco, and lived there for 2 to 3 years, and then I moved back here. And that was 3 years ago. So I have a pattern of moving every couple of years and then using this as sort of a home base, I guess, as somewhere to always come back to sort of regroup and plan my next move, or, you know, try to understand something about myself. I guess I'm just gonna keep talking. Let's see. Could you give me some prompt?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You say that you come back to regroup and learn something,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about what you learned when you came back from Spain.
Mm-hmm. So during that first time, when I'd left and come back, I guess it was, being in Spain was a pretty great eye-opening experience to just sort of seeing the possibilities of the world and different ways of living. When I went there, I was pretty convinced that I didn't want to stay in sort of a rural place in the United States for much of my life. It was really great being there, and then at some point I sort of realized that I'd learned a language and I was having a lot of fun, but I probably wasn't going to stay there in the long term. I guess I didn't feel all that connected to the people or the place. So I moved back here thinking that that connection might exist here for some reason. And I think that's sort of a pattern that, that has emerged, is that I'll come back here sort of looking for a sense of place or a deep connection that is somehow associated with this place geographically, with the Hudson area or Columbia County, or and probably also sort of, you know, looking to reconnect with people that I love, with family and close friends. But then I seem to always find that those connections are wonderful, but they're not really enough to sustain my ambitions, my intellectual or professional or even personal ambitions for, I guess I always end up feeling a little, not restrained, but just limited in the opportunities and connections that do exist here. But then I'm always drawn back. So it's a sort of a funny dynamic in my life, in my personal life. It's hard for me to flow from just one part of my life to another. That's interesting. So basically after when I left here, and then for the first time after coming back from Spain and then leaving again and going to college, I was I was hopeful that I would find something, you know, like a passion that I wanted to pursue. I never really did in school. I ended up, you know, sort of pursuing interests, personal interests that were meaningful and exciting, but never like really feeling like they would be my life. So I studied Spanish literature and fine arts, photography, and had a good time, but sort of also knew that that sort of wasn't going to be my path. I guess another funny sort of sub, while those things were also happening, I was also running all of these funny small businesses that since I was pretty young, I always was excited about. I was excited about, you know, about understanding how commerce worked and how people interact with each other and how that, how you could sort of be so free to do any of those things. And that was pretty awesome for me from a really young age, from when I was like a teenager, because I also felt sort of freed by, this was, you know, sort of when the internet was first becoming a place to do commerce. So no one knew. I was really young when I would, like, the first business I did, I started selling silverware, antique silverware, on eBay, when eBay was, like, a very, you know, sort of, like, wild west of selling things. And I got a kick out of it. I was probably 12 or 13, and people probably thought I was, you know, a 60-year-old lady, and that was just, like, a really funny, interesting experience to sort of create a persona. And I guess in some way, maybe that was the first telling sign that just being here wouldn't satisfy all the things that I wanted to do and experience, was playing with like a different persona on the web. So, you know, as time went on, that business sort of, I lost interest in that and moved on to other things. And in that sort of in-between that I was talking about, when I came back from Spain before I went to school, I started apprenticing as a mechanic at a European mechanic shop, also around here in Canaan, New York, and had a pretty awesome, there were sort of short stints, and I've gone back there numerous times to work with the owner of that shop, and he's sort of been, he was maybe my first mentor in business, and also taught me a lot about cars and how to work with my hands and how to sort of problem solve and understand, just sort of shift the way I look at things to to get a better sense of how to fix them or improve them. It was, I guess it's funny, through working on cars, I guess that's been part of the way I've developed my outlook or approach to any sort of challenge that I look to, that I'm like engaged with or interested with, is like pragmatic, but then also creative or a little bit, you know, abstracting a problem from like the physical components of it, and then, you know, piecing it all back together and trying to understand all these discrete parts and how they function together. So I guess that was probably a pretty important part of that first leap that I made after leaving school, or after leaving, graduating from high school and then traveling a little bit and coming back. That was maybe like the first time where I gained some understanding of my, I guess that's part of my personality or just my approach to the world. And then when I left to go to college, I'd sort of had these very real experiences, in business already and in just sort of in discovering the world. So when I ended up in a small, very idyllic school with a lot of really smart people, but a lot of very sheltered people also, I sort of felt, I pretty quickly began to feel that same sort of pull towards more of the unknown, things that I wasn't so sure about. It seemed more mysterious and exciting than college. And I think that's something looking back that I regret a little bit, actually, that I didn't sort of more fully immerse myself in all the mysteries of academia as I could have. I sort of just breezed through college and did things I enjoyed and cared about, but didn't really push myself that hard to learn skills that I wish I had now. I think I'm going to stop there and go back. I'm sort of telling three... I'm going to try to tell three stories at the same time that sort of commenced, you know, in my early life. So I sort of told a narrative about just where I came from and then what I was interested in. And then I think the other big part that I wasn't talking about was the community that I did have when I was growing up in this area, which I think was pretty unusual and important in my life and sort of how it shaped me. And that was being part of this Quaker community that sort of came together in weekend retreats at a place called Powell House, which was very close to where I grew up. And I guess Powell House is technically it's the retreat center for New York Yearly Meeting. It's one of the retreat centers for New York Yearly Meeting. So it's sort of this beautiful campus of old buildings sort of in the woods surrounded by ponds and all of this beautiful stuff. And I would go there. My parents found out about that center, and even though they weren't Quakers, were... I guess that they just realized that it would be sort of a good community and outward perspective from living in a really sort of rural, simple place. I'm not exactly sure, actually, of their motivation for sending me there. But I knew that once I was there, I found just a pretty incredible, supportive group of young people who were interested in, I guess, making genuine connections in a way that a lot of adolescents don't get to do because of the culture that exists around public schools or just sort of this like meanness or competitiveness or sort of closed off to saying anything that, you know, making yourself vulnerable at that age. And I think that one of the things that that Kyle House did for me was, put me in a community of young people who were open to doing that and sort of taught us all how to do that too, you know, through sort of counselors who are a little bit older than us and then youth directors who would lead these weekends. So it's a very interesting community because it would sort of come together and then we would all disperse back to the places where we lived, which, you know, were kind of all over the Northeast. And we would sort of form these powerful bonds for weekends, really intense weekends, and then not see each other for 3 to 6 months. And it was like a pretty, I think it was a deeper connection than a lot of other people that I knew at the time could find. I had like really close friendships with people who I would keep in touch with, but then, you know, always sort of knew that they were there even when they were far away. And I guess looking back on that, and then I still maintain a lot of those same friendships, I think that's probably sort of another thread of why I've been someone who is a little bit restless or moves a lot or is always sort of seeking when I go to new places. I think it's sort of looking for that same sort of genuine deep connection with people I meet. And on some level, I think when I don't find that when I move to a new city, this is certainly not on a super conscious level, but I think that affects how long I'm willing to spend in a place or how deeply I'll invest in my life there. Which, yeah, I guess is something over the past few years I've come to realize more readily that is something that I probably need to, not that I need to shift, but that as I get older and my priorities change is important for me to look at. And so, yeah, I guess that was sort of a snapshot of these different things that were happening to me maybe between the ages of 10 and 18. And then as I move on into sort of the next phase of my life, as I think of it, was sort of the time that when I left school and was once again sort of looking for new, vibrant or just different experiences from what I'd had. I was in Philadelphia, and at that point I was pretty sure that I liked living in urban spaces. I liked the diversity and the opportunity for exploration that was there. And then I also sort of ended up working in hospitality at that time, in bars and restaurants. And I guess sort of at that time discovered this whole other way of connecting with people, in what felt like really intense, but short periods of time, which I think was pretty fascinating for me. And also just being able to access communities that before hadn't really been open to me. And I guess I'm specifically speaking about, like, one of my first jobs was working in a gay bar in Philadelphia, and I just sort of had my eyes open to this whole world that I was always, you know, like, peeking around and trying to understand, but like with a little bit of trepidation. Before that time, you know, when I would travel or when I lived in Spain, I would like peek my head into a gay bar and then run away because I was scared, or because I was just alone and wasn't quite sure how to make those connections. So yeah, I think through work, I was able to discard a lot of my anxiety or fear about becoming part of that world and that community. So that was pretty neat. That was sort of like, I did that. I was in Philadelphia and worked in one particular bar, and then in a restaurant and a nightclub, and was just having a really good time exploring those possibilities. And I think at some point, my timeline gets fuzzy in here, which is also, maybe that's just a side note that I want to say. I guess I'm always surprised at myself at how unclearly I remember years or events. I often wonder whether that's just me or whether that's a generational thing. Like, if I'm talking to older generations, they'll be like, in 1973, this is what I was doing. And I have no idea what I was doing 4 years ago. Or whether that's just something particular to me and sort of how I experience the world. But anyway, so when I left Philadelphia, I left also because I was, my first sort of meaningful relationship came to a close there, and I felt like I needed to leave that place, and sort of not be reminded of all of these, you know, intense, yeah, just the intensity of sort of my first relationship where I really cared about someone in a romantic way, and sort of how that all came crashing down. And so I came back once again to upstate New York at that time. And continued to work in hospitality. And maybe not as quite a ambitious or way, like there around here there really isn't anything that is pushing the boundaries of what I was that interested in. But I guess the things that were important about that time were sort of once again building my understanding of business, and how small companies work or don't work, which I had a really good time doing. And I ended up back at that same mechanic shop part-time, but more helping to run the business, which felt, I guess I realized at that time that I had a pretty good knack for helping people achieve their visions in small ventures, I started to realize that I'd be able to do that well in my own if I knew what they were, if I could sort of choose anything and commit to it and stick with it. But of course I couldn't because I sort of have that same 1 to 2 year attention span. So I was working on those two things. I was working at that shop and my friend's restaurant in Chatham, which is another small little town. And then, yeah, I guess rebuilding connections with friends and family that were still around here. And then definitely sort of drawing on that same Quaker community that I had growing up, and, you know, spend time traveling a little bit and visiting them, and, you know, some of them were still in school or some were in graduate school at that point. Traveling around the Northeast and visiting them and reconnecting, and always still sort of marveling at how strong those friendships were after sometimes years of not maintaining them. I guess it's also funny to say that these are like Quaker friendships or relationships, because they weren't actually, they weren't really based in the Quaker faith, like in any sort of religious context. They were much more, what was important and sort of lasting about them were just this more deeper sense of community and understanding each other's lives, and maybe there was also some continuity in like sense of purpose in the world of wanting to build strong relationships and connections with people, and help people, which is sort of one of the tenets of Quakerism, to, you know, be of service in the world. And that would be something that, you know, I would definitely connect with people and sort of be interested in learning how those sort of early values that were instilled were playing out in their lives, and try to understand how they might play out in mine, because I felt like, I definitely felt like at that point I wasn't doing any meaningful work that helped. Yeah, that sort of like spoke to those values that I did still care about, but wasn't sort of engaging that much with. Yeah, so maybe that's another side note. So then I was back here for, how many years was that? Maybe another year and a half. And had started a little business selling cars, which was fun, restoring and selling old European cars. And then was just doing a bunch of small, you know, jobs related to business and to hospitality. And I think at some point I went and visited actually an old, one of my Quaker friends who had been, who was living in San Francisco, and went there for a week and just sort of fell in love with that place. And once again, I think the vibrancy and the diversity of the city, but then also, I guess, the geography and the, I guess the feel that it was still all of these, it was a lot of small towns or different communities sort of geographically separated by hills or, you know, sort of the energy of different neighborhoods in the city. And all of that really fascinated me. So I moved there. I sort of went and visited, and I remember running, went for a run on top of this beautiful hill in San Francisco called Bernal Heights, and ran to the top of it and had this sort of like 360 degree view of the city and the bay and the mountains, and just was like, at that moment decided that I needed to go there. And so I did, and I think at that point, I think I might have been, by then I was probably 24 or 25 when I moved. And I would say that started sort of this new chapter of my life where I began to focus a little bit more on what I was passionate about and where my, I guess my future work, but then also where my community, like the communities that I wanted to belong to and sort of invest in. So yeah, in San Francisco is where I began to find those. And it, for work, it definitely was in hospitality. I guess in creating sort of magical immersive experiences for people. And that's a little bit of me understanding better now than I did then why I was so excited about it. But yeah, I found my way into pretty, well, first I found my way into some pretty wild, into one particularly pretty wild gay bar that I had a really amazing time working at, and just sort of really immersed myself in the, that particular community in San Francisco, gay community in San Francisco that was, certainly lived in these in between public private spaces and in a pretty wild way, and really loved that, but not necessarily having to be a part of it in the way that everyone else was, by working in this particular place, I felt like I got to participate, but also didn't have to commit to sort of the intensity of that lifestyle all the time. I would, you know, sort of thought of it as a way to socialize, but also make a living, which was pretty good. I guess at some point I also started to realize that it felt a little, it didn't feel like that wholesome of a way for me that I wanted to live. And I began sort of searching around again for that same sense of community that I'd had, I guess, probably as a Quaker. That's sort of the same sort of thing that I was looking for. Once again, not very consciously, but just sort of looking back and knowing that I was craving genuine, deep connections and was finding like a wealth of experiences and diversity of views and had a lot of fun, but wasn't really connecting in a deep way. So then I went on to work in a pretty great restaurant that was really busy and really fun and served amazing food and had really great values and relationships with, you know, I guess the farmers and the people who they worked with, and just a lot of integrity and a lot of, they put a lot of care into everything that they did. And it was also a really successful business, which was pretty exciting to me to sort of see how you could do something, you could have a really specific vision, and execute it and be wildly successful. And these were all things that I cared about, you know, like sourcing beautiful food and creating real, genuine experiences for people and, just sort of creating community around, I guess, around hospitality, and sort of drawing in all of these values and thinking about ways that, you know, what I valued growing up and what the sort of base tenements of Quakerism could sort of show up in all of these different places, like a restaurant. And so I ended up, after a few, I think I was there for about a year and a half, and I ended up managing the restaurant. I was the assistant general manager, so I did like a lot of the I held a lot of the relationships, I guess, between guests and my staff. And then had a really great mentor who was the general manager of that restaurant, who was probably the most, he's probably the most inspiring person that I've worked with, because of this intuitive way that he mentored and inspired me and also just the staff of this restaurant to do amazing work and to really care about what they were doing and to feel like they're a part of something larger, even larger than the restaurant. You know, they were like doing important work, and that was all, it was all real. It didn't feel at all like that was, you know, sort of like this false narrative that he was weaving for us in order to, you know, make us perform. So yeah, that was pretty powerful, and I realized that that was something that I wanted to be able to do for other people and to do in my own projects or working in other projects, to be able to sort of motivate people in that very real way and to understand, to have enough clarity of vision in the things that I do and enough integrity and commitment to be able to be able to make myself feel that way and to make other people feel that way. So yeah, that was definitely pretty important. Couple of years for me working at that restaurant and with Nick, who was that mentor. And then sort of right around that 2 year mark again, or 2.5 year mark, I started to feel a little bit restless in San Francisco. I still really loved, I had created all these, you know, sort of great rituals and routines in the city for myself, sort of, and then mixed in with working really hard in hospitality. It's always, you know, it's a field where you work really hard to make other people feel really good. And I loved that, but I think I was also realizing that that might be unsustainable or might stop being rewarding in that same way at some point. It was like putting so much of myself out, And sometimes getting it back, but also, you know, that's sort of why you were getting paid, was because you created these amazing experiences for other people, and reciprocation wasn't really part of it. And so around that time, I also met a pretty wonderful man who's my partner now, who was just back visiting San Francisco and was living in South Africa. And we just sort of immediately had a very deep, real connection. And he went back to South Africa, and we kept in touch for maybe 6 months, and then ended up moving back to California. And then we sort of formed, just, I don't know if it was quite on a whim, but I had been wanting to, I think, come back to New York again. I felt sort of distant from old relationships, close relationships with family and friends. I wanted to reconnect those, and also just sort of figure out what my next move might be, for exploring my interests, professional interests. And John was thinking about going to school in New York, to graduate school. And at that same time, I also had this sort of exciting opportunity that that same restaurant had offered me a job to go open all of these new, they were sort of dotting the coast of California with these fancy, really fun pizzerias. They asked me to go open them for them. And I sort of thought about that, and thought about how I was feeling about working really hard all the time to create beautiful experiences for other people. And in this case, sort of start what have become really successful businesses for this company. I just didn't quite see, I didn't think that was my path, was to sort of invest those years in their projects. So instead, John and I decided to move back to upstate New York, to Hudson. And we sort of just chose Hudson because I knew a few friends who had moved here and had an inkling that it was a town where, you know, a small town that where there was interesting stuff happening and young people sort of moving back to from New York and investing in building community there for themselves. And so we moved here, and I bought a house because that was sort of one of the projects or one of the interests that I had in San Francisco, but it wasn't really attainable for me there. It was like buying property and renovating it and sort of learning about construction and sort of, you know, I guess this other theme in my life is different ways that I've always worked with my hands or sort of learned by doing. So yeah, I was really interested in that. So we moved here and I bought kind of a wreck of a house. And John and I hadn't really ever lived in the same place for more than, you know, we like hung out for a month or two in San Francisco together and then talked on the phone. And then we sort of started our relationship in this, pretty intense way, sort of going into winter in upstate New York, which is something that you forget when you live in California about how intense it is to have seasons that affect, you know, like physically obviously affect you, but also just emotionally or mentally are pretty challenging, with like darkness and cold. And so anyway, that was sort of the start of our relationship. We were tearing apart this old house and rebuilding it and getting to know each other. I guess it was really surprising how well it worked out. It was sort of like we were both happily surprised that we really liked each other and have grown to love each other. But I think it's also been one of the moving back here to Hudson has been one of the most challenging experiences for me in terms of, resources or the ability to to sort of pursue any project fully and have it work out. I guess I've been really pretty lucky in my life that all these different experiences I've had and places I've moved to, I've always just found my way without a whole lot of resistance. I've always worked really hard, but been really fortunate and never gotten myself into a place where I felt like I couldn't, I didn't have the freedom to make choices or to move on or to just sort of shift things. And ending up here with this house, which is like sort of more of a commitment than I'd ever taken on. I think that we felt more like we were almost stuck in like, as opposed to like the American dream of buying a house and finding your place in the world, it felt a little bit more like a trap. And it took us a pretty long time to sort of get out of that. I think I started to climb out of it when I found, when we found a good community here, a close community of friends. But then also sort of meaningful work. I think I guess that's still probably my biggest challenge with being here is, I never sort of identified what exactly my project or what my passion was being in this place, other than having this house and renovating it and trying to imagine what sort of in between or interesting space that could be. But in terms of like working for inspiring people or finding mentors or sort of discovering the sort of next area of interest for myself, I haven't found those things here really. I found like our group of friends, our community are all people who I think have passion, and that's why being in this small town works really well for them, because they sort of know their path and sort of the spaciousness of a small town and the ability to live a pretty decent life on less resources than, for instance, being in the city is pretty magical for them. But for me, not knowing those things, it's just like I've just felt a little bit stifled by that. And eventually I met Liam. I got a pretty interesting job, I guess I would say, working for this young guy who started Etsy and has sort of built a small upstate world or play world around craft and manufacturing, and I sort of got in doing business planning and development for him, which was cool, and at first was really exciting to find sort of something that entrepreneurial. But I think over the time I've been there, which is maybe 2 years now, I've sort of, once again, I've realized that the ambitions for that project don't really have much reach beyond this place. And I think for that reason, once again, I've sort of grown restless and ready for the next thing in my life, because I don't feel like this is my home. I feel like it's a home base, but I don't really feel like I belong here. And that sort of takes me, that's what I've been preoccupied with. That's what I've been thinking about over the past 6 months to a year, is like, where do I fit in? And it isn't here, but where is it? And why am I here? I could talk a little bit more about where I imagine I'm going, and how maybe that also connects back. I think it pretty clearly, in the past 6 months, I've realized how that does connect back to a lot of those sort of earlier foundational experiences in my life. And so what John and I have been playing with, the ideas we've been playing with are figuring out how to create those same sort of, for lack of a better word, magical or immersive experiences for people that feel really genuine, like, you know, fostering really genuine connection and sort of creating the opportunity for community building. But I guess in the context of motion or movement or travel, which has been this sort of thread throughout my life and also John's life, and somehow working that in with hospitality, with my desire to host people and take care of people. And so where I'm going is we're going to basically the house that we bought here, we're transforming into something that's sort of in between a hotel and an exhibition or an event space, where we'll be able to invite friends and artists or designers, because that's sort of that's the community of people who we spend time with and who, you know, we feel most connected to make this house into a space where they could come through and spend time, and then also figuring out how to build that into a sustainable business. So it'll be something like a hotel, like a experimental hotel event space, residency space, and using our house here as sort of a pilot of what we hope to create all over the world and sort of lots of the places in the world where we've both traveled and feel like rooted to that place or connected to that place and want to have the opportunity to move through those spaces, and then also give that same opportunity to the people to sort of a larger community of people that we want to be connected to. So I'm really excited about that trajectory for myself. And I think it's sort of, I'm just beginning to really understand how all the things I've done for the past 15 years, I guess, are connected in that way, in this sort of, are connected to people and forming, just sort of like profound, genuine connections and relationships with people. And then, I guess, in motion, like doing that while taking in and participating and trying to understand through this very hands-on process, different places in the world and different situations and different communities. So I think that's where I'm going to spend my life. Maybe that will change, but it's cool to be, I guess it's cool to be old enough to have enough perspective to like be able to look back 15 years and feel like it is possible to draw, if not like a continuous line, sort of like points of continuity that come from all of these sort of like fractal experiences or something. I think I'll need a prompt if I'm going to keep talking.
Okay. So you have this beautiful vision for yourself based on this great trajectory that you've been on. And I'm wondering if you want to think out loud about the trajectory of Hudson and what you may need Hudson to be to make sure that you and John's business is successful.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting to think about this particular place and sort of how our project is reflective of what may already be happening in Hudson or what we sort of hope will happen here. And I think that, I think maybe I'll acknowledge that a lot of my, what I hope from Hudson or hope Hudson can become is also problematic in the sense that it's a, I have this vision of a lot of giving the opportunity for a lot of people to come and do creative work here and have that be sort of like a, create a different opportunity and space for people. And I think it's important to acknowledge, and I think it's a big part of the conversation that's here right now, that that's problematic and that's sort of like a privilege that young creative people who have great education can come to a place like this and create it. But then there's this whole other narrative of Hudson that is like, and I guess I've experienced that a little bit too, like feeling really trapped here, or feeling like there's a lack of opportunity here, or feeling, you know, like, how can those two things exist in the same place and just be such different realities for different people? And I think I got like a taste of that for 6 months to a year, and it was like pretty terrifying and bad. And now I'm, you know, sort of back in a place where I can think outside of my current circumstance and sort of envision a prosperous and exciting future for Hudson. And yeah, I mean, I guess what does Hudson need in order to achieve, you know, what do I need in order for our project to succeed in Hudson? Is I think all of those things are happening already, and it's basically like a genuine interest in this place geographically and as like a just a space where there's sort of, I don't know exactly what you call it, when there's enough gravitational pull of one particular interest, in this case sort of creative people looking for space. So I think all of those things are happening already. And I also, you know, am self-conscious or have a fear that because all of those things are happening, the city is definitely changing, and it doesn't seem like there are definitely some people working, I guess, to spread that wealth or that opportunity to people who have lived here for a long time that, or not a long time, but that like don't have the education or the opportunity to sort of like dream anything up and then make it happen. Because there is just like a lot of poverty here, or a lot of, you know, a lot of people who just can't work, basically. There's just like no work here unless you make that work for yourself and bring it in from the outside. And yeah, I think that's really hard, and I'm definitely mindful of it, but don't really know how. I'm still trying to figure out how, if I care about that, how I can do something about it, or how I can not just be someone who is taking, sort of creating the world I want in a place and ignoring the place that already exists there. And I think that that is really important for me, because part of why I move to places is because of sort of like the draw of what's already there, or sort of this magic that happens, that's like happens because of diversity and because of, I don't know, because of history, I guess. So not being part of a movement that's erasing that and sort of creating a more sexy, polished narrative that you can totally just occupy that space and ignore all of the shit that's happening around it, especially in hospitality, I think. I think that's one of the things that hotels love to do, or not love to do, but feel like they need to do in order to attract people for recreation. So yeah, I think one of the things that'll be really important for us to figure out here and understand here, because also as this project grows, all of the other places where we're probably going, where we hope we can open small projects, will have these same questions and these same concerns as to how to, share prosperity and not ignore or erase histories or narratives or the realities of a lot of other people who live here. I don't know if that was those are some of my preoccupations. I don't think I have any clear answers as about how I plan on solving those for my project, and I don't have any clear thoughts on how, Hudson will solve that, or the community that's here, or the people who are arriving, or the people who have been here and are invested in it. I don't know how that will resolve itself, but I recognize that I need to spend more time and put more thought into it and probably engage with more folks about it. And I guess maybe my hope, yeah. So what's my, I guess my hope for what we would figure out is how to I guess I imagine our spaces being being open enough and just open enough that they are very place specific, and that they're not creating a new narrative or imaginative narrative, but that we're spending enough time in each place that we are to understand why we're attracted to that place in the first, attracted to certain places in the first, why in the first place, why they're important or why they are meaningful to us, and then figure out how to welcome in and create the opportunity and a platform for a genuine conversation and exchange to happen between our community of creative people that move through spaces pretty quickly, and other people who are pretty rooted in place and in the realities of a place, and all of the benefits and all of the challenges that they have. Figuring out how all of their hard work or how all of their struggle can be part of the conversation and can hopefully be, I don't know, if there's need there, or if there's a way in which our project can can help or can fund people that are not moving around. I think we want to be able to do that and figure out how that feels organic and good and not like outsiders coming in. I think we basically always want to figure out how to be on the inside of the communities within places, and because if we're able to do that, if we're able to be on the inside or at least make real connections, then I think being compassionate and being people, or for me, being someone who has always, who holds values of helping other people and being empathetic and the sort of basic tenement of service to others. I think that if I'm able to understand those, the challenges or the sort of the reality of places, then those things come naturally to me, my desire to help other people comes naturally, and I'm hoping that through these sort of quasi-commercial and lifestyle ventures, those things will all just sort of organically work themselves out.
Do you mind if I switch gears a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been talking about place, which has been really fascinating, and then something that came up when you were talking about your trajectory was the importance of mentors, and I thought that was really lovely. And I wonder if you want to just think out loud a little bit, like, what makes a good mentor?
Mm. Yes. I think I'll start by saying that's something that I've been really craving in my time here in the couple of years that I've been in Hudson. I've had two mentors who have been important to me, and sort of realizing that they were important to me sort of in these specific phases of my life. And then feeling like I'm in coming into this next phase of my life where I'm more focused on a specific project and a specific passion, and sort of searching out and also trying to understand what a good mentor looks like for this next phase for me. And I guess I'm definitely having trouble finding that person, and I'm also having trouble understanding what that person will be. Sort of drawing from my past experiences, I would say that a good mentor for me has been someone who is really good at what they do, and what they do is something that I care about and inspires me. And also people who are able to, communicate really well about why they make choices and why they do things a certain way. And maybe that's because I'm, in that way, I guess I am sort of I don't know if pragmatic is the right word, but I've always asked that question. You know, I was like one of those kids who would just stay up late into the night and call to my parents and say, why does this work this way? And how does this work? And, you know, just like really wanting to understand, maybe it's like the mechanics of how everything works in the world. So people who are able to do that for me and explain to me why they make choices or why they do things, or, you know, how a motor is put together, you know, those are people that have been good mentors for me in the past. And then, but then also Nick, who is the manager who I had in the restaurant, I guess what started happening there was he was really good at all of those more like procedural and mechanical sort of connections. But then I also just witnessed sort of his magic with people and his ability to empathize really well and sort of intuitively know what people needed in order to succeed or feel good. I realized the power of doing that in a more conscious way. I think that I have that. I think I have a fairly, like, an innate ability to do that to a certain degree, but I've never cultivated it actively, sort of my ability to lead, or my ability to, lead in an empathetic way. I think it's something that I have, and then through growing up as a Quaker, I certainly gained, you know, that sort of a good amount of emotional intelligence in that way. But then, and maybe this is also because, like, I sort of skipped a lot of professional training or something that a lot of people go through, where they have, you know, a boss who does this really well or who doesn't do this very well in sort of a more structured organization or corporate world or academic world or all of those different worlds. I think that I've always been missing, and like now I'm actively missing that sort of example by which I can either draw like you know, the strengths of leadership from, or sort of the weaknesses and the ways in which I think that mentors can also be people who, you know, are failing at what they're doing, I guess, but doing it pretty fantastically or apparently, so that, you know, you can sort of like learn from how they're not acting. And maybe I have that a little bit right now. The person who I work for now, I feel like I consistently learn to treat people and act in ways that are the opposite of how he sort of moves through the world. And that's good, and I think it's sort of taken me a while to realize that I can learn from what someone isn't doing to me, or, you know, I can observe them not doing for people around them. But I guess, you know, maybe it's wishful thinking, or it would be great if the opposite was true and I was sort of experiencing the magic of someone teaching and leading really, really well. Particularly in, I guess, growing businesses and ventures that do sort of require they require the collaboration of a lot of creative people and more sort of structural folks, which I guess I would put myself in that basket. So yeah, I think for me, going forward, what I would imagine a mentor for me, particularly at this moment, would be someone who could sort of work in that in-between space of inspiring, of I guess really fostering really amazing communication and inspiring creative folks to work with. I don't know, I guess I like the word structural, folks who are more like sort of, who can also be really creative, but are interested in being creative through sort of like linear structural development of organizations. And I guess I've been craving that to the point where like this year I applied to go to business school because I was like, maybe that's the place where I can find that in a really immediate and intense way. So yeah, that's what a good mentor would be to me.
And what about you as mentor?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I guess it's a funny moment too, where I guess as soon as you start having enough perspective to look back at your own life and the way that you've grown and been challenged and failed at things or succeeded, then it's certainly true for me that then, you know, in my current work, at least, and I guess also in my friendships, I'm at a place where I have enough knowledge that I'm starting to share that with others and advise them. And do I think I'm good at it? I don't know. I think I'm learning to be better at it. I think that within a structure, I'm really good at it already, actually. I think that, like, when I ran a restaurant, I knew sort of what was expected of me and how to create these, you know, specific sort of, they're definitely not based on, like, illusion, but there's, like, specific actions you can take in order to make people feel really good. And I think I was pretty great at helping folks who didn't have as much of an intuitive sense or even just as much experience as me to create that sort of same experience for people in hospitality and restaurants. And I really enjoyed that. I think it's harder for me now in this organization I work for to mentor people because it's pretty vague exactly what we're doing or what the intention of the project is. And it's really hard to help people to excel or do well when you don't quite know what you're supposed to be doing, I guess. other than, like, that's sort of, like, I guess those are, like, the work things. And then there's also, like, how do you mentor someone to be a compassionate person or to, like, care about, to, like, be empathetic or, like, consider. And I think that that's also pretty, like, I think I know how to do that pretty well, but I guess an interesting way to look at that would even be in my relationship with John. I think that he's someone who is, like, I don't think he has as much emotional intelligence in that way that I've sort of had this, all of these amazing opportunities and all of these people in my life who have helped me develop that. But that's pretty hard to, I think it's hard to teach, and I think it comes more through, I guess through leading by example, or just showing, maybe leading isn't the right word, but sort of showing through example, and I guess through communication, like through always talking about why I'm making choices or why, you know, how I understand, I think it's especially like how I understand how other people are feeling or doing. So yeah, I'm still figuring that one out in my own relationship. And then I think with friends as well, totally. How about me and a mentor? I guess the other way that, yeah, that's all I want to say. Yeah.
Okay. I think let's end on, there was a point when you were talking about San Francisco and you, the space around you kind of lit up when you talked about rituals and routines.
Mm.
And feel free to share those specific San Francisco rituals or routines, or feel free to riff off, like, what are your rituals and routines here in Hudson?
Totally. I think wherever I go, my rituals, there's a consistent, I consistently value water. Like everything, all of these, basically all the places I've lived or traveled through, I always sort of seek out the most, how would I say it? Like, not fundamental, I can't quite think of the word, elemental, like the most elemental experience I can have with water, as a way to, I guess, center myself or sort of like cleanse myself or just so, in San Francisco, I guess that would have been, there is a Japanese bathhouse that I went to all the time, not all the time, but regularly. And then all of these incredible hot springs in Northern California that I would make journeys to as a way to sort of, I think that was especially important because of the work I was doing, I was sort of taking, I was putting a lot out into the world and then I guess taking a lot in as well, like a lot of other, you know, being someone who's empathetic and also just like giving a lot, I think you end up taking back a lot of maybe energy that isn't always quite as healthy as the energy you put out. So I think that was specifically a way for me to sort of like wash that away, wash away people's, other folks' pain that they sort of maybe paid me to take on, you know, through work and hospitality. So that was really great. I think here, my rituals here are also pretty connected to water and to like, I guess to the river specifically, whether that's just like going and sitting by the river or running along the river, or finding swimming holes. That's a pretty important thing about Hudson and about upstate New York is folks are always, you know, all summer and into the fall when it's hot, every day you're sort of halfway through the day, you just start thinking about where you're going to go swimming. It's a pretty great way to sort of close out a day. It's just by jumping into the water. And then I think places where I've lived that I don't have that opportunity in some way to sort of find that are places that I can't deal with for very long. Like when I lived actually in Philadelphia, I had this terrible time of there was nowhere to go swimming and the rivers were all, and I guess I ended up even just spending a decent amount of time along these rivers, at least just visually. I got some, that was good enough, or it wasn't good enough, but it was helpful. But everything there was like very polluted. You just couldn't find water, you know, you couldn't. I guess that was one of my rituals. And then my other rituals are pretty consistently related to food and sort of seeking out, this will be in specific cities, and then traveling to sort of seeking out amazing food. And I guess what amazing food means to me is like food that's very connected to the people who make it and to sort of all of the energy that goes into it. Around here, that means being pretty connected to people who grow food and like getting to hang out with them and talk to them and cook with them. And like, that's a pretty magical thing about Hudson. But then at the same time, there's also sort of this pretty intense lack of the next step of that process, because I care a lot about, you know, hospitality and food service. It's like, there's this really funny gap between all of this beautiful stuff that's happening with people growing food and sort of experience or foraging food, and then places that are then transforming that into these immersive experiences for people that are also like accessible experiences for people. So that's sort of like a funny gap that exists here that, you know, I guess what I'm alluding to is like in San Francisco, I would just always be seeking out restaurants that were doing cooking and serving people in a way that was like beautiful and inspiring and sort of innovative and sort of always changing and shifting based on like season, but also just on like that sort of continual artistic expression and how those things might shift within food. Like in San Francisco, I guess that ritual sort of played out in, like discovering tiny little places in the city that were doing amazing things, or like going on motorcycle rides into beautiful rural places in Northern California and eating, you know, oysters in Point Reyes, which is this beautiful place north of San Francisco. And then traveling, that's sort of one of my little side projects with my brother, is that every time we travel, we have sort of like a guidebook for amazing food that we've found in the world. We have this idea that eventually that will become sort of a, nothing like a Yelp, but something where, you know, for very specific, for people, I guess for like-minded folks that are always craving similar stuff to what we're craving in food, to be able to have this guide where you don't have to feel anxious about what you're gonna find in a place. You just like, there might be one magical thing in 100 miles, and it's like, you just go there and you don't worry about anything else. That's like a pretty consistent ritual for me, is food and discovery in food. Those are probably the two strongest ones. Oh, I guess the other one is probably, has to do with motion or travel, or actually maybe it has more to do with motors and motion and like speed, not necessarily like insane speed, but just like being able to like spending time on a motorcycle or spending time in a car, sort of zooming past different worlds, going on drives. I guess that's one of my rituals. Pretty much always alone. And getting lost, going on drives and getting lost. It's a pretty good one. Yeah.
Sounds lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that you want to have on the record, any names you want to share, any places that you want to make sure get into the archives?
I think I'm pretty good with my, with the level of names or people or places I named. I didn't really think about it very much, but whatever came out, I feel fine about, and whatever didn't, I feel fine about, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Sean. That was lovely. So just to reiterate, my name is Theodore Kerr. I'm sitting here with Sean on June 15th, 2015 at the Solaris Building. And we just had a lovely conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you.